Welcome to the Permatemp Corporation. A presentation of the audio podcast, This Is Actually Happening. Episode 55. What if reality suddenly fell apart?
So I was born in New York City. I lived there till about five, and then my parents decided that that was no place to raise a kid, which I would understand because that was New York City in the 70s, which makes me 41. So we moved out to LA, and I spent the bulk of my childhood in San Gabriel Valley down in LA. And then I came up to Berkeley for college and never left because I was like, oh my God, this is not my parents' house. So I've sort of been here since. I was an English major at college, graduated in 95. That was the middle of a recession, and there were no jobs in publishing or anything for English majors. So I actually became a sysadmin, a system administrator, because all my friends were CS majors. I was a complete miserable failure at it. Meanwhile, I was socializing with everybody and referring a bunch of people to my company. So I did recruiting and then HR for about 15, 20 years in high tech. At one point in my 30s, I was like, you know what? I'm sick of my life. I have to change it. I'm going to go really focus on being a writer and really form an identity as such. When I told my colleagues, when I said, I'm applying to MFA programs in the early aughts, they were like, MBA? And I'm like, no, MFA. They're like, MBA? I'm like, no, MFA. They're like, wait, fine arts? You draw? And I'm like, no, I write. So I went to Mills where I got my MFA, and that's sort of kind of how I found my way to writing. So 2006, I was an MFA student at Mills. I was working part-time in high tech. I was married at the time. My husband at the time and I worked together at the same startup. So that was really my life. It was this major transitional period in hindsight, where it was sort of half my life was writing, half was my life was making a living in an industry that I would eventually leave. Change was about to happen, and I didn't realize that change would happen in that way. I'd been married for 7 years at the time. You know, it was very staid. It was just sort of like, all right, I'm going to go to my MFA program. I'm still going to make a living. And, you know, my routine was the same every day. And I don't really actually remember anything happening that year. Well, eventually something happened that year. We had a house in Tahoe, and every winter we would go up to the house in Tahoe, and that year was no exception. Our best friends were going to arrive later that day, and this was December 31. I got up, we decided to run an errand at the hardware store because one of the filters in the house needed replacement. I mean, it was that normal a day. We drove to the Ace Hardware in Tahoe, and as soon as I got out of the car, I just felt completely disoriented. I remember seeing snowblowers outside the hardware store. I mean, that image is going to stay with me forever. They were red, they were lined up, and they were turned 90 degrees and doubled. I have visual impairment when I have migraines, but not to that level. And I just thought, this is really strange. I thought it was an extremely weird migraine because I used to get migraines all the time. I had apparently a headache. I don't remember the headache, but I was told that I was complaining about a massive headache. And I was able to tell my then husband, you know, what was happening. And he said, well, why don't you sit down on the curb? Because I was about to sit down in the middle of a parking lot. And he said, I'll be right back with the filters. And I don't actually, because at that point I'd sort of lost awareness of time. And he came back out and he's just like, no, I'm not buying the filters. And I'm like, oh, you haven't? He's like, we got to go back home because this is really weird. But I remember getting back and feeling extremely tired. And I said, I'm going to take a nap. And I woke up about 6 hours later. It was right before our friends were about to arrive. I'd had dreams about being in the wilderness, in the snow, losing my shoes, not being able to talk, and getting lost. And when I woke up, I really thought that had happened, to the extent that I asked them later, I'm like, we were out in the woods today. And they're like, no, we've been home all day. My words were kind of messed up. I had a desire to blog about it, so I went on my blog and said something just happened, something really weird just happened. I called it a brain drain, and that's all I did the whole evening. I'm like, I had a brain drain. And to me, that made complete sense. But, you know, and everybody else was like, okay. And then there was another part of me that was just like, you're not getting through to them. There was no sense of alarm. My friends just thought I was just like, you know, all right, it's New Year's, you know. And we went to fondue, and I just sat there, and I did talk. I don't remember what I said, but it was just stilted, like, oh yeah, you know. But I just had the sensation that I was like a bicycle trying to get on a freeway, where the cars were just going by really fast, and I was like a bike going, ooh, I can't, wait, oh crap, I can't get on. And I was on the on-ramp trying to get up onto the on-ramp, and I couldn't. So that's the most, like, that's the closest analogy I could come to it. I just couldn't ramp up. And I would say certain things, you know, I didn't go completely mute, but it was enough for them to go, wow, she's really odd. Like, I'd open my mouth to talk and say, oh, never mind. I think I was 33 years old at the time. So the next part that I really remember is, you know, we were driving back. We came back to Berkeley. And it was just a normal drive, and I was just like, wow, I'm really spaced out. This is like the worst migraine in the world. And then on the second I woke up, that was the day we all had to go back to work, and I was like, I can't go back to work. I just feel really messed up still. And our fridge was empty, so we'd be gone like 2-3 weeks. And so I went to the store, and that's when I realized I was completely messed up. I love going to the grocery store. I was just like, I didn't know what to buy. Everything was just colors. I couldn't read. Like, I could tell they were letters, but they wouldn't go into my brain. It just, like, I felt like I'd landed on Mars. And, you know, by the time I got out of the store, I looked down. I was like, oh, I bought one thing. What is it? You know, it's a jar of spaghetti sauce. I was like, how do I get home? I got behind the wheel of the car and started driving. And every time I tried to think about whether I had to make a left turn or a right turn or whatever, I would go blank. It would just be like, I have no idea. Kept telling myself, just keep driving, which is sort of weird. It kind of frightens me that I was on the road like that. But I just told myself, keep driving, because it seems like you're getting closer all the time. And eventually I found myself at home, and that's when I was like, something's horribly wrong, and I can't communicate with the outside world, but I gotta call 911. And then I was like, I don't really know how to dial 911. What's the phone number for 911? I used a landline, and I just look at it and go, where is 911? What is 911? And like, all the numbers were just like nice little shapes, and I was like, 911. Until I mashed in a bunch of, I have no idea how long it took, but I mashed in a bunch of numbers on the numerical keypad. And I was like, well, I guess somebody will, whoever picks up. And then I'll at least talk to somebody and maybe they'll figure it out for me. I have no idea. And then a guy picked up and he's like, yeah, hi. And I'm like, oh, well, who is this? And it was my husband at the time. And he said his name, it's me. And I'm like, oh, good. I was trying to reach you. I think something's terribly wrong. I couldn't figure out how to reach you. And you could tell from my voice, just sort of being so spaced out, he's like, I'm coming right home. And that's how we found ourselves at the emergency room. The weirdest thing is, throughout this whole thing, I was reading Kurt Vonnegut. I just kept reading the same paragraph over and over again, in a sense of denial. But at the same time, if you told me to read directions, I wouldn't have been able to to make out what the letters were. They're just completely abstract things. It's just interesting what my willpower, like what I was trying to convince myself to be, and then what my brain was able to do, and sort of, you know, my intuition leading me, and then also the fact that I was not able to cognitively recognize things. It's just this very surreal experience. Meanwhile, I'm not freaking out at all. It was just more like, huh. And it felt like sort of like wandering. I was like, what is this? I don't understand. And I became this very pleasant person for a while. And I was like, oh, wow. What's going on? And I just was like, I guess this is what it is. And I guess that must be what that is. And I guess I should call 911. But I have no idea how. I mean, that's kind of what the tone of the voice would be. It was just really great in that sense. I just had no freakouts. I just was like, hi, everybody. Nice to meet you. So glad you're here. I remember being told to fill out forms going, ah, and I just handed it to my, you know, ex-husband. And I was like, can you fill this out? I was carrying Kurt Vonnegut the whole time, like in my hand. It was just this thing. It's still on my bookshelf, that actual copy. And, you know, I just sort of addled on it. And I was like, hi, everybody. It wasn't until the doctor said, we're admitting you, that I looked down at the page and realized I'd been reading the same paragraph for days on end. Oh, I actually am not reading this, even though I think I'm reading this. And I put the book down, and that's when I stopped reading it. A lot of little things I was doing was totally incongruous with what I was going through. Like, I was blogging on my blog. And my friends ultimately, or like a bunch of readers, were like, get to a hospital. This is not normal what you are posting. This is not how you usually write. They thought I had vasculitis, and I had to keep asking them because my short-term memory was, I think, 10 minutes long at the time. I was like, what did they think I had? They're like, vasculitis. Okay. What did they think I had? It was just, you know, like 51st states. God bless my husband at the time for being so patient with me. He's just like, vasculitis. And then the next day they stuck me in an MRI. And then they were like, well, my dear, you've had a stroke. And I was like, oh, but what did they think I had? I think I was there for 10 days. I actually really liked my time in the hospital. It was very restful. And like, you know, I didn't have any stimulation, which was great to just stare at a white wall. And I was so easily exhausted that I actually even look back on my hospital stay with great fondness. They were doing tests to figure out root cause. And they suspected a PFO, which is a patent foramen ovale, which is a hole in your heart that actually we all have as fetuses because we don't breathe with our lungs. In most of the population, that hole kind of fuses after you're born and start breathing air. And in about 20 to 25% of the adult population, that hole never fuses all the way. Your body will produce a random clot, most likely in the legs. In a normal person without a hole, the clot would get filtered out through the lungs. It won't make it back into the brain or the body. But if you have a hole, like a PFO, the clot will go into the right side of your heart and have a big chance of going and skipping the lungs and then getting shot back through your body out the left side along with unoxygenated blood. And in my case, that blood traveled out of the aorta into my brain. And it was a small enough clot that made it straight to the center, which is where the thalamus is, and that's where it was stuck. A clot goes into the brain and kills part of the brain, and it chokes the brain of oxygen. And, you know, that part of your brain will always be dead. From now on, whenever there's an MRI, there will be a spot on the MRI where there's dead tissue and there's a scar on my brain. It's weird because I feel like I've gained back most of my abilities, but it's because the brain has figured out ways around that hole. I'm fortunate because it eventually rattled loose. Because if you have a clot for a while in your thalamus, and your thalamus gets damaged enough, you pretty much, you know, end up in a coma, a permanent coma. Thalamus is like this mystery thing, you know. As infants, like, we don't really have a fully formed thalamus. So one of the things that the thalamus does is it helps you cope. It contains coping mechanisms. And that's the thing that says, mom will be right back, because mom's always right back. Until then, the baby just screams and cries because they can't figure out how to cope. So I lost a lot of my coping mechanisms. It's also sort of, in my experience, it's sort of this arm that retrieves memories and weaves them together. I couldn't deal with a lot of sensory input. I quickly discovered that while leaving the hospital. Like, I couldn't turn on the TV, I couldn't turn on the radio. Like, it would only have to be one sensory input at a time. I couldn't order stuff off a menu, I couldn't make choices. Like, I'm not a huge meat lover, but I basically, for the next several months, ordered hamburgers off menus, because I figured every restaurant had hamburger. So I just would look at a menu and be like, oh God, I'd be like, do you have a hamburger? And that's what I would order. I'd be like, I'm hungry, I'm so dizzy, but I just couldn't synthesize how to make a peanut butter jelly sandwich. I was like, I don't know how to make that. I couldn't balance a checkbook. We discovered, because I couldn't figure out adding and subtracting, even though I thought I could. He was just like, what's going on with the checkbook? And I'm like, well, I did the addition and subtraction. And it was all wrong. It was just all wrong. I just thought I was doing the right thing. I just thought this is how it happens. And I couldn't even fathom that I wasn't doing it right. I would have these flashes where, like, oh, that's weird. But at the same time, I didn't think it was weird. I would just, like, be floating through the day. Before I knew it would be 4:30. And I wouldn't have known. I just was like, was I staring at that wall for 3 hours? And I could have been. I don't know. It was a huge opportunity for me to experience that, because I'm very much a planner, worrier, all this stuff. And to have my brain turned off, like the switch just clicked off, was a huge gift. So I carry those months with me with fondness. About halfway through the year, when I realized how bad my deficit was, it got really bad. When I was recovered enough to understand the extent of my loss and the extent of the journey ahead, I got very bummed out. But until then, I was very pleasant. I was just like, this is really interesting, because I couldn't worry about the past, couldn't worry about the future. And so I was very centered on the here and now. All responsibilities were taken off me because I couldn't handle them. But at the same time, I didn't really feel like that was a bad. I just was like, oh, okay, they're taken away from me. I didn't like think about like what that meant to my identity and stuff. At a certain point, my doctors told me, this is when we leave you. I'm so sorry, but, you know, by medical standards, you're cured. And I felt incredibly abandoned. And I knew what they were talking about, but I was just like, I can't live like this. I just knew I wasn't myself. If I'm not gonna come back, why come back? I just wanna die. As my recovery wore on, like I would just get frustrated easily. I just became this like human toddler, where I would just like cry because I was frustrated when somebody said something to me that was maybe insensitive. I couldn't actually correct them because I didn't have the words, but my feelings were hurt, and I'd just cry. Or I'd like lose my temper in the pharmacy line because it was just taking too long and they weren't being like, you know, attentive enough. And then after that, I got very depressed. I was just like, I got very angry and depressed about what had happened and why it had happened. And there was a good deal of feeling sorry for myself. Then one of my readers pointed out that I was going through a grief process, and that really enlightened things for me. And I was like, oh, so this is something I have to go through. But yeah, there were moments that were pretty dark. I lost a lot of friends, or I decided to lose a lot of friends who weren't there for me in the way that I wanted them to be or needed them to be. I think a lot of that had to do with the fact that when you're 33, things like this don't happen. Yeah, it's very isolating, and I couldn't communicate. I think that's why my blog was so important to me, but like I'd be exhausted, so I couldn't communicate. And so writing was this major thing for me because I could do it on my own time. It could take me hours to write one blog post, but it was on my own time. Because of the PFO, I was never really good at sports. And so I never really had a connection to my body until recent years. So all my self-esteem was in my brain, was about my brain. And suddenly that was gone. And furthermore, I had a photographic memory. So I felt like, you know, that was something I relied upon a lot, and that was gone. And so all the things upon which I relied and all my strengths that gave me confidence were taken away from me. So you just get trapped. It's like when your computer reboots, that's sort of what happened to my brain. And then everything on the hard drive gets wiped. You know how that sometimes happens? You're like, oh my gosh. And then your computer comes back and you're like, oh, my hard drive's gone. Where are all my files? Where are all my files? Where are all my files? And that's kind of what happened with my brain. I felt like it rebooted and just got wiped. And, you know, and when that happens, sometimes your data is somewhere else and some of your data is recoverable and you have to go get an expert. And that's sort of how I feel like it happened. And there are things I'll never get back. And there are things that I got back in a different way. But I feel like that was just like my body saying, we're not doing this right. When everything is taken away from you and you're sort of in the bottom of this, you know, just crap hole, you just kind of go, what is the one thing I want to do? What's like the one ability I want back? And you just go for it. When I was depressed, I was like, I just want to be able to write again. I spent all my energy every day writing, even if it was just a paragraph, because I had this like wacky notion that my neural pathways are regenerating. And I just hung my hat on, like, I might be able to regenerate them and rebuild myself as a writer. And like, if everything's obliterated, then I get this second chance to build my brain in a custom way. And I don't know if that's true or not. The anonymous blog was an amazing sanctuary for me, because I didn't actually want everyone to know I had a stroke. You know, my language wasn't really what I wanted it to be, and I was very, in some ways, self-conscious. I just wanted to write whatever I wanted to write about my recovery and being in having a stroke. And so it was a huge sanctuary to do that anonymously, but be super honest otherwise. There are a few good things that come out of that, you know, to have compassion and empathy for invisible disabilities. I grew up like completely academically focused and stuff, and I just had no idea that you know, you can still be a smart person but not be able to do certain things the way other people can. And I was able to walk in those shoes for a while, and it gave me incredible empathy for my students with disabilities when I later was teaching. The stroke was not the worst thing that's happened to me in my life. It really isn't. But it gave me the muscles to survive other events in my life that were worse. My, you know, husband wanted a divorce right after I had our kid. But I had a baby, I had very severe postpartum depression, and then my marriage ended. You know, he actually said, I think it was a stroke, and I was like, really? Huh, I don't know. I think it's all the other things that happened. But I think that was the beginning. You sort of go on different vectors. When I had my stroke, I couldn't really take care of my spouse. What also happened that year was that my mother-in-law was killed a couple months after my stroke. And it was under complicated situations, and the grief was very complicated for everybody. And I wasn't really able to be there for him. I tried. You know, I don't want to guess what he went through because it's his story, not mine to tell. And, you know, when I had a baby last year, I couldn't do the same. I couldn't take care of him either. And I think that's sort of a bookend thing where there is a connection between the stroke and the end of my marriage. I mean, there's a 7-year gap, but sometimes it just takes time. I think a lot of crap happens to us for no reason, but I think it's up to us to give reason to it, because just stuff happens. Like, and it happens to good people, and it happens to people who deserve it, but most of the time we don't deserve it. And most of the time we survive these things. There are some very like tragic circumstances under which we, like, there are people who don't survive their hardships, but it's up to us to not only survive them, but thrive and give reason. So, you know, if it hasn't happened to you, it will. Sorry to be all sounding doomish, but I mean, we all kind of eventually get it.